Off the ball. Rugby.
Like that.
There's a massive elephant in the room here, which is Nienaber, since he's come on board. But the Nienaber factor, since he's come into the system, the Leinster, the alignment that we're talking about, hasn't been as smooth between the bulk supplier to the team in terms of defensive systems and all that matching up. So
join in the obsession. Subscribe now at offtheball.com/join.
It's really enjoyable, really fun.
I'm fascinated by this. That game is unbelievable.
What is the point here?
Falls right off the tongue.
They needed the vibes, man.
Now that he's hopped on the magical plane across to England.
Anything you want to talk about? Oh, topical.
Like, you just walking past, it's like five Ali G's. It's like the Power Rangers over there.
This is one of the bigger characters in the Ireland squad as well.
I'm not a back three guy.
That's what it says in the team.
But they don't tend to get things wrong. Which is nothing linear at all in any way, shape or form. Like, I mean, that's not how the world works. Like, you're managing 11 individuals, 11 men of different ages, of different backgrounds.
Welcome back to Outside the Box, where we think it's episode 10? No, episode 7. The Irish football podcast, where we dig a little bit deeper than the headlines. How are we all this week? You know, another international window creeping into view. Selection questions are starting to pile up again, and once more it feels like nothing with this Ireland team is straightforward. 6 weeks on Thursday, we'll all be in Prague. Sampling the atmosphere and perhaps maybe some Staropramen.
Yes, absolutely.
Who actually starts at right wing back against Czechia? Is it still Seamus Coleman versus Matt Doherty, or is that conversation rumbled on somewhere else? What does the midfield look like without Josh Cullen? How much faith should we be putting in club form right now? Are our concerns around Nathan Collins at Brentford, our captain? Are there questions to ask about Evan Ferguson and his ongoing injury struggles? Delighted to say I'm joined as ever by Westmead's answer to Steve Claridge, the expert of the English Football League, Matthew Brennan. Hello. And Ben, I love the European Union, Symes.
Yes.
How are you, lads? Yeah,
don't get me started on the European Union. It could be here all day. My love players going to Europe, but European Union.
Outside the European Union.
Not from a right-wing point of view, I should clarify that.
Before you go all political, let's just get right into it. So, we'll get right into it. So, I was thinking, when we were thinking about this episode last week, we do actually put a lot of plan and a lot of serious thought into this. You'd be surprised. But I was watching Match of the Day on Saturday, and the game that came up was Chelsea and Wolves, and Matt Doherty was playing right back, and he gave away a really bad penalty, and then it came up. It was a silly penalty to give away. Then it came up, he came off at half time. Okay, Chelsea going to win the game 3-1, whatever. And then the next game was Everton and Fulham, and David Moyes was serving his touchline ban, and the camera pans up to David Moyes, and right beside him is Seamus Coleman.
Yeah.
And I'm thinking, God, you know, he looks like he's more of a coach than player. I know he's had his injury issues over the last couple of years or whatever. But first of all, are we concerned about who's going to play in the right wing back position coming up in March?
You take it away.
I'm not concerned, because I think it will be Seamus Coleman. My only concern is that Seamus Coleman has played a whole 10 minutes of football since Budapest, and that was the week after Budapest on Monday Night Football against Manchester United, and he went off injured 10 minutes in. That is the only concern I have. I'm pretty confident it's going to be Seamus Coleman. Hamer trusts Seamus Coleman. It's not exactly great to see one of your right backs not kicking a football and the other one kicking opposition players rather than a football. It doesn't exactly fill me with confidence. The only other person, I think, because Festi obviously can't play the Czechia game, the only other person is maybe Alan Brown comes into conversation for that right back role. But again, I can't see Seamus Coleman being dropped from this team, no matter how many or how little minutes he's playing football.
Can we, I know, leader of the Alan Brown fan club over here. No, I'm joking.
Fine, I'll take it.
I know, before we get on to Alan Brown, obviously he played last night for Middlesbrough against Sheffield United. But Matt Doherty, like, his career with Ireland has been, up and down, a lot of up and down, and a lot of, sometimes he's not particularly a fan favourite, which I think sometimes is a bit harsh, But if we look back in the last maybe couple of weeks, let's say since the new year, he played 90 minutes against Shrewsbury Town in the FA Cup. He was an unused sub against West Ham and against Everton. Then he was an unused sub against Newcastle, Manchester City and Bournemouth, all in the league. He played 45 minutes against Chelsea on Saturday. Where does Matt Doherty fit into this squad, this team and Hamer's thoughts?
Yeah, it's a tricky one, because when Hamer was first kind of coming in and picking his squads, Matt Doherty was available for a couple of those and wasn't in the squads in the first place. And then, you know, there was some words exchanged, not exchanged per se, but, you know, there was a bit of back and forth as to why that had happened and why it hadn't happened. And some other players were coming out talking and people were, you know, maybe taking Doherty's side as opposed to Hamer's in his exclusion from those original squads. But I don't think Hamer has really ever viewed Matt Doherty as a right wing back option, to be honest. Obviously, that's where he's played most of his trade throughout his career and when he's played his best football. But I actually would say, like, as far as the right wing back situation goes, I think Coleman is going to start. How long he lasts, hopefully the entirety of both games. If we do well, we're going to play two games anyway, but you know what I mean. I think Alan Brown's ahead of him in the pecking order, and I think Mark Sykes is probably ahead of him in the pecking order as far as starting at right wing back goes.
And as a squad option?
A squad option, I think, yeah, I think he's there. Purely because he can fill a couple of roles, and although it didn't work out well at all when he played at left back against Hungary and Dublin, I still think he's probably viewed as an option there. We're not totally blessed with the left backs either, although that's turning up a little bit now with Robbie Brady being back, but obviously I think Liam Scales is going to be suspended for that first game as well.
Yeah, just on Doherty, we had a little bit of a fallout a couple of months back, and he'd done that interview, and then he was obviously got back in the squad. He also had a wrist injury as well that kept him out. Do you include Matt Doherty in the squad in March?
I include Matt Doherty in the squad because he can kind of play anywhere across the back 3/5. Not necessarily a worry, but kind of an interesting thought I had when I was watching the highlights of that Wolves game the other day, is like Matt Doherty, like, okay, he's not getting any younger, but also like ever-changing game of football. Matt Doherty's role as a right wing back when he excelled in that Wolves team is very different to the role of a right wing back today. So like a right wing back today, you're going to be athletic, you're going to be up and down the line. Not exactly Matt Doherty's strengths. Matt Doherty, however, suited that right wing back at Wolves perfectly.
Yeah,
suited the system that he had
with Nuno.
Perfectly. With Nuno. But I don't know about Matt Doherty's attributes well suited to a right wing back role outside of Nuno's system compared to any other system. I think he is better in that right centre half role. I'd have him in the squad 100%. And I mean, if not only for the point of he is the Wolves captain, I know like you're looking at the team who are bottom of the Premiership, but you know what I mean? You're not going to turn around captains in a national side.
In Hamer's wing back system as well, from what we've seen, I know it was a little bit different maybe in Budapest in that Liam Scales started, and obviously that was the same against Portugal. It's a different sort of opposition because your back's against the wall for most of that game, and maybe that was the anticipation with Hungary as well. But the right hand side of our team, typically, especially at the start when it was Jacob Ryan was the one on the right hand side, we tend to use the left hand side as our kind of method of attacking, you know, whether it's Robbie Brady or Ryan Manning there delivering balls in. So I think there's a bit more defensive onus on whoever's playing on the right, and I don't think that really suits what Matt Doherty. Doesn't get the best out of Matt Doherty, put it that way. I would have him in a squad. I think there's room for an extra couple of players considering the two that are suspended. So you could include them in the squad as well as a couple of others. But I also wouldn't be totally surprised if he wasn't in the squad at all.
Yeah, he's turned 34 a few weeks ago. His contract is up at Wolves at the end of the season. It still remains to be seen, I suppose, when you're, I guess, unfortunately for Wolves, they're kind of waiting to be relegated. So, yeah, that probably depends a lot on whether he signs a new contract there or he moves on somewhere else. So moving on to who could eventually fill that role, maybe not long term, but at least in the short term, is Alan Brown. He's spoken quite well over the last couple of weeks. He's done an interview there recently with Michael Walker. He actually talked really interestingly about doing his coaching badges and about how he wasn't actually so interested in doing it. And then he'd done them and it was like, oh, this is actually really good. I really enjoyed it. He is playing central midfield and he's playing right wing back. And Hamer spoke about this in his interview with John Fallon, the Examiner, last week, that he's playing this kind of fluid fluid kind of role that you've been quite a close eye on the last couple of weeks?
Yeah, I've watched a good bit of Middlesbrough, like the last little while, purely as well because of the fact that the teams they were playing contained a few Irish players, a bit Stoke a few weeks ago. And they played, I was watching Sheffield United last night, and I was expecting some Irish contingent there. Didn't turn out to be the case. Like Bennett McGuinness and as well as Tom Cannon all spent 90 minutes on the bench. But yeah, he's playing under Kim Hellberg, who's this kind of proper new generation coach, 37, coming over from Sweden, like, you know, exactly what you'd expect. Plenty of passing, intricate football. Yeah. Don Goodman was on commentary last night and said he doesn't think he's ever seen a Championship side play such one-touch intricate football like that before. Not that
really?
not that Championship sides have not that they're the best Championship side of all time, but just the way in which they play football. And they've got four or five players in the team that are, you'd confuse them with each other when you're watching. They all just look the same. They're the same build. They're the same type of footballer. But back to Alan Brown, like, yeah, he's played everywhere this season, really. He's played in all of your three stereotypical midfield roles as a six, as an eight, and a little bit further forward as well. And with the nature of their system, they do play a five-back, three-back sometimes, and he's played as a right-back and as a right wing-back, more so as a right-back. But it's a hard one to nail down with the way Middlesbrough play, just in the way it is so fluid, and that's not a sitting-on-the-fence thing, but he's excelled in every position, particularly in that Stoke game. He got an excellent assist. Well, I don't actually think he even got the assist because Tommy Conway made a mess of the finish and ended up taking two touches anyway. But he's been very good. He looks... Alan Brown has always been a player that we would associate as being higher up the pitch and, you know, getting driving forward type stuff. But I think now he just seems, from what I've seen of him anyway, the last couple of months, he just seems a lot more comfortable on the ball, a lot more assured in his play as well. And I think as far as leadership goes, I'm always hesitant to bring in experience when we talk about Ireland players and Ireland squads, especially over the last 10 years, because a lot of that experience is negative experience. There's not a lot of wins involved. But you can look at that from the other way too, in that, like, you know, your typical point to prove type thing. And I know in American sports as well, it's a bit of a cliche, they always say that they'll be first to hire the guy that's lost as opposed to the guy that's won, because the motivation is there. And Alan Brown, speaking in that interview that you referenced there, was saying that he's not totally content with how his Ireland career has played out. And, you know, a lot of people would look at Alan Brown and go, yeah, he had a decent career, played a lot for Ireland, had some good moments, but I think he himself thinks he's playing the best football of his career. He's playing at the highest level in the best team that he has done so far in his career. And I think he'd have his eyes set on being in that team. And I look, as far as form goes, I think he's in the best form of any player we have outside of your Tri Pirates, obviously.
Yeah. Ben, what's your thoughts about kind of Alan Brown? What's your kind of memories of it? Memories is the wrong word, but, like, you know, what's your, as a fan, like, going to a lot of Ireland games back the last couple of years, especially in the Kenny era, like, what are your thoughts on Brown's impact in the Ireland team?
Well, I imagine the Alan Brown that I remember is very different from the Alan Brown that's playing today, by the sounds of it. The Alan Brown I remember, was just trying to remember there what was his role in the playoff against Slovakia, off the bench, just checked it there, for James McCarthy, which is an old throwback.
And the way the year has passed over, isn't it?
Not exactly a like-for-like swap as well. But my memories of Alan Brown are, like, I'm wary of using this player's name because I'm not comparing it in anything other than this facet that I'm about to compare to. Frank Lampard late style runs into the box.
I knew you were going to say Frank.
Yeah, and that's sort of what I meant.
But that is like the...
arriving late.
Like he always made those runs and they were never really like... It was a thing of... I listened to Pat Nevin on the other week and he said the best advice John Aldridge ever told him was, find where the defenders aren't.
And go where the defenders aren't.
And that's what I kind of associate very strangely. Yeah, yeah. Alan Brown with those years, like those Serbia games and Denmark games. And I associate Alan Brown with making those runs to box. Remember, the goal away to Serbia is like classic Alan Brown for me. Like that is the Alan Brown that I remember playing for Ireland.
Yeah.
But I also remember a lot of Alan Brown prayer for Ireland where it wasn't exactly, you know, let's say some of the passes went a little bit astray and it wasn't as quick football or the passes weren't crisp into the feet of another player. And I do remember a lot of that Alan Brown.
Mm.
And I'm going to be very honest, like, I haven't seen much of Alan Brown this season.
Naturally, yeah.
But not so excited, but more so intrigued to see how Alan Brown has moved from being that player that I thought, a little bit sloppy on the ball, but he can always pop up with a goal, to a player maybe who's a little bit more mature and deep line midfielder.
Yeah,
I just don't know if it's is it too much of a drastic switch to put him into that midfield too when Hamer hasn't used him there at all?
Well, that's the thing, it's hard to know. Like, I think the last time he played for Ireland was that Greece game, I believe, or it was around then anyway, and that
last
was under Hamer.
Last cap was 2024.
Yeah. So the
Greece Nations League game, or the
this is the one Solis scored in the 2-0.
Oh yeah,
those two. I think he played in that game, it's hard to know whether you can just throw him into that midfield. But see, the thing is, right, I think whatever we do now that Josh Cullen isn't there is drastic. You know, it might not seem drastic because lads have been in and around the squad and the names might be the same, but I think the setup is going to be different, and whether he's the type of player that can come in and come deep and pick up the ball, that's yet to be seen. We don't know in an Ireland shirt, and as I'm always quick to kind of mention, I think you might have said this a few weeks ago as well, David, that like he's playing in a team that is very comfortable on the ball. He's got players around who are comfortable on the ball, and he's comfortable in just popping a pass into someone who might have someone a little bit tighter than maybe you'd like them to be when they're playing for Ireland. But before we move off it, I actually was talking to a Middlesbrough fan a couple of weeks ago. Randy got in touch with me.
Borough.
A Borough fan, yeah. And he shared a bit of a season review as to how Al Brown was getting on. Sorry?
Wasn't Bob Mortimer.
But if Bob Mortimer wants to get in touch and tell me what he thinks of Al Brown, absolutely go ahead. But what he said to me was, now this is in early January, so this is actually before he got the assist against Stoke and kind of it was in the midst of that run of games he had at right back when Callum Britton was out. But he said, Alan Brown has been a very, very good signing. He came in on deadline day and has been very impressive. He's played all over the park as a six, as an eight, as a right centre half in a back three, and even as a right back in a back four. Very versatile is Mr. Brown. He's good in the tackle, solid enough defensively, 1v1, and positionally aware out of possession. He said, however, in possession is where I'd like to see a little bit more from him. And as a right back, he very much keeps to his shape and doesn't bomb forward too much. Now that changed basically within this 2 weeks, as we've seen. And when he plays in midfield, he rarely finds himself in and around the box to contribute the goals and assists. Barry's goal against Southampton, people remember, with Gavin Bazunu spilling it, and I think it was a 4-0, won that finish. And he said, sadly, it's only loan, as I'd probably take him on a permanent. So that's what he had to say. And it's funny, a couple of the points that he raised, he said that was in early January about him not bombing forward too much and not getting himself in the box. That has actually changed because he's scored a couple of goals.
Yeah.
He could have had a couple more and he's picked up a couple of assists. So,
yeah.
And I think the reason we spent so long talking about him is because Hamer has essentially said he's going to be in the squad.
Yeah.
He's as good as.
Yeah. Last cap is actually September 24. And you're right, that game that Solis scored. 2-0 win for Greece against Ireland in the Nations League. Yeah, so I was moving on from Brownie.
Mr. Brown is brilliant.
Yeah, that's a man called him.
That's a like Reservoir Dogs. Like, yeah. Hopefully he doesn't have the same small face.
Can Alan Brown play Ireland football is the big question. What is Ireland football? Well, Miroslav Kubek tried to explain that last week, the Czechia manager. Just on the kind of topic of midfield, I know we don't think Brown is the man maybe to replace Cullen in that kind of exact role. Who is?
I think he might be.
In the six?
I think he might be.
I don't think so. Well, I think Alan Brown, for me, Alan Brown, the game is better when it's in front of him. As in, he's kind of running onto maybe from a deeper position. I know that kind of doesn't make so much sense. He's playing as a six, and as a six, you're expected to get the ball in a half turn, like
I don't think he would be any worse or any less capable at doing that than any of our other options in that position.
Jack Taylor?
I think Jack Taylor is better in a more advanced position, personally.
Okay.
In the same way, I would say similar for Alan Brown, but I just don't think there's an obvious, like, he's the guy who's going to come deep, take the ball off Nathan Collins and put his foot on it and turn around and get us going forward. So I don't think it's that crazy to suggest it, but I'm totally open to it.
Should we be worried about the game time for Connor Coventry, Jason Knight?
Yeah. Me personally, I think Connor Coventry is the most like-for-like replacement for Josh Cullen. But I would be slightly concerned that he's not getting a lot of minutes right now. Connor Cody was signed in January. Obviously, we know Connor Cody is a centre-half and played in midfield.
Mm-hmm.
His first game was, by all accounts, didn't watch the game, but from the reports I read, was very good and kept his position.
Yeah.
But Connor Coventry didn't even get off the bench in his last game. So I don't know.
Connor Coventry is the most like-for-like replacements. Like, Jason Knight is suffering from injuries. He's adductor problems for like God knows how long, and they've been going on. He comes back, plays three games.
He's playing through pain. Yeah,
yeah.
They're giving him a few weeks off.
Okay.
Now.
Yeah. So, which is good for Ireland, I guess, then for March.
Yeah.
And that's good enough for me. If Jason Knight gets those couple of weeks off and he comes back fit and firing for March, then for me he starts.
Yeah, I like Knight.
Jason Malumbi is in a really struggling West Brom team.
Yeah.
Should we have concerns about him?
I would say that
there's none for me anyway. Like, I think Malumbi comes into the Irish team is where he, like, I don't want to say excels, But like that kind of passion.
No, he revels in it. Like, playing it's a very Irish, it's very Irish thing. Like, yeah, but he does revel in it. I wouldn't have, like, that West Brom team are bad. Mm. Like, as bad as it gets right now. And I would obviously have concerns about that. It's not ideal. You would rather him being playing in an average team, a slightly better team. Yeah. But I don't think it's going to have any bearing on how he performs for Ireland, to be honest. And I actually would have spoke very highly how Jason Mumby performed in maybe less so the Hunger game, but that Portugal game, the initial Portugal game.
Yeah.
And then the Armenia game that followed, where he got a bit of flack because the whole team wasn't great. Mm-hmm. They actually thought he was trying a bit. So yeah, like I'd be pretty happy with any combination of Brown, Malumbi, and Knight. But
okay,
yeah, happy.
So kind of,
I've flipped a little bit there. Sorry, because Jack Taylor, I was very keen on a couple of weeks ago, but I'm not sure. I don't think it's going to be a major difference with the whoever it is.
Yeah, I suppose on the theme of whether club form pays too much heed into international form, sometimes we kind of read into it a bit too much, and in the question of the number six position. Nathan Collins hasn't played the last two games for Brentford. Is that a concern? Like, he's played a million games over the last maybe year or two anyway, maybe a bit more. Brentford have won the last two. Great result away to Villa, great result away to Newcastle. On the bench, came on against Villa, obviously, in that game when they went to a back three and they were kind of holding on because they had a man sent off. Didn't come on at the weekend. Is this something that is concerning you, Ben? Should he move to the continent?
Keith Andrews. Keith Andrews, maybe. Keith Andrews is, as the lights flicker above me, it's like a sign not to say anything bad about Keith Andrews. But in his old former office, I wasn't going to. Keith Andrews is very, very quick when he drops a player. A player tends to be dropped. And that player finds a hard time making it back into the team. We've seen it with Mikkel Damsgaard. Mm. Brentford's player of the year last year has found a very hard time getting back in. And what I will say is, Andrew said just before the Villa game that he needed stitches and he got a bad knock at the end of the training, at the end of the week for Villa, and that's why he couldn't start. But he came off the bench that game and he played in the centre of a back 3/5, which is, I don't want to downplay his role, but obviously it's a lot easier being in the back centre of a back 3 than it is playing in a 2 in the Premier League.
Yeah.
To not play in a back 4 the next week in Newcastle is a little bit worrying, and it's probably a little bit more worrying that both Christopher Eyer and Sepp Vandenberg were excellent against Villa, and I thought they were excellent against Newcastle. I watched the full 90 of that game and I was so impressed by the whole back four of Brentford.
Yeah.
It just looked like a really well gelled unit and not a unit that you think it's only the second time that they're playing as a back four this season in the Premier League. I'd be a little bit concerned there with Keith Andrews' track record so far this season of dropping players. The only thing that would kind of, you know, rein me back into thinking he will start on Thursday night against Arsenal is the fact that he is the club captain. And they wouldn't be so, would he be so ruthless to drop the club captain and leave him out of the team? I suppose he did it with Jordan Henderson.
Yeah.
And Jordan Henderson finds it tough to get back in. I'd give it another 2 weeks before I start throwing up the alarm bells and those lights start flickering again.
Yeah. I think maybe Thursday, and I agree actually with pretty much everything you say there, but I think maybe Thursday is the good time for when Brentford will switch to a back three again.
Just, I was going to say the exact same thing. I'd be shocked if they didn't play a back five against Arsenal. I wouldn't be overly concerned, as you flagged the initial thing with the first game. And then I do think it's a case of continuity. They played very well before the two lads, and they played very well again on Saturday. So it's just sticking with that. I wouldn't be overly concerned about it. But I would just hope that some of the form that Nathan Collins has shown with Brentford over the years can pop up with Ireland over in Prague, because he didn't cover himself a glory even in the Hunger game that we got to this playoff in. So look, he's still not that he has a lot to prove. He's nailed on the team sheet. Like he's going to start for Ireland, obviously, unless he's injured, and hopefully he's not. Hopefully them stitches don't open back up. But
no,
I wouldn't be too concerned. But as you said, definitely want to keep an eye on.
Yeah. So moving from the kind of the back of the pitch, I suppose, to the front. And Evan Ferguson, Troy Parrott, Hamer Hallegrimsson has said in that interview, the same interview with John Fallon, the Examiner, that the two of them can start up front together. We'll get to that in a bit, but Parrott at the weekend was playing against one of his clubs he likes to play against, the Ajax, and scored what seemed like a perfectly good goal. And I actually haven't seen the reasoning as to why this goal was called.
I think I might have it for you.
Okay, go on.
So there's a guy at the back post who is in an offside position when the kick is taken.
Yeah, the initial one.
And he's he's holding
an Irish player,
and getting back.
Okay.
And therefore is deemed to be interfering with play, although it does move on to another phase. So,
yeah. But I think you're an Irish fan, eh?
Irish fan.
You've never seen that too. Graziano Pelle.
Oh, right.
Pulls up his Irish journalist, says, I think you're an Irish fan. I think you're acting like a bit of an Irish fan there, because there was absolutely nothing wrong with that goal.
Yeah.
I think they're quite, yeah, look, listen, I'm not going to be, I remember when Wigan were in the administration and got relegated at the expense, well, Barnsley stayed up at the expense of us, and I remember getting triggered as a slightly younger man by all the Barnsley fans telling me that rules are rules, and that's why we were relegated. So I won't throw the rules are rules back, but I think, yeah, maybe by the rule book it was right to be disallowed. But look, listen, yeah. I'm not gonna go to war over Troy Parrott scoring again. So
he had another assist this weekend. I think he played pretty well as well, by all accounts. I saw
more assists now in the last little while.
Yeah. Who's Martins now? Who's the coach?
I actually don't know.
Hazard?
Still the interim, I think, isn't it?
He's still there, yeah.
Yeah, brilliant flick last week.
The Martins moment of the week.
Yeah, so a potential front partner for
Leroy Echtold.
Leroy Echtold, good lad.
Went to Middlesbrough.
Yeah, a potential partner for Ferguson or for Parrott up front could be Evan Ferguson. And I know, like, feel free to bring this conversation wherever you want, because I know we were chatting about this on Off the Ball Breakfast on Tuesday morning as well. But the quotes are really worrying. Like,
yeah. The fourth
sprain he suffered, okay, he's been out for about a year with an ankle issue last year, so the situation has become a bit complicated. That's what's happened. That's what Gianpiero Gasperini said in his press conference before the Calgary game last night. Daniel Malin went on to score two goals last night. And you're kind of thinking, oh God, you know, he made it look quite easy. You know, he's got that was his third goal.
He definitely scored in his debut. He won disallowed in his debut.
So
three or four, anyway.
Yeah. So this Ferguson issue, this ankle issue, stems, I think, from the Fabinho tackle.
It's easy to draw that line, anyway.
But I don't think there was any.
I have it on a pretty good account that it does.
Yeah, like that was a horrific tackle, and he don't even got a red card for that. And VAR, whatever. Like, don't get me started about VAR. It's a nonsense. So Ferguson. Him are saying here that him and Parra can start up front together. That's probably before the information that he probably received at the weekend, as in Ferguson's ankle problems. Okay, he's definitely been updated since then, and he probably keeps quite a close contact. We know that. Is this something to really worry us for the March playoff? And is it something that the other strikers that are in contention for the squad, Johnny Kenny and Adamida, who's trying to make a comeback, okay, he mightn't make it.
I think Adamida might get a match day or two before the window, would be my estimation.
Is this like something to be really concerned about?
Gasperini's comments to me, I'm like eagerly anticipating them on a Monday morning, like every week. This one, I think, maybe is a little bit lost in translation, somewhat.
Oh, no parli italiano?
Which, no. So when I'm reading these comments in full, I'll get to the last line in a minute, which is unfortunately pretty funny. But before that, he says, every time he changes the direction the ankle seems to sprain, like that seems maybe a little bit excessive for me. And he says, it's one ankle or the other. The other had the operation on is most problematic, which hasn't completely solved. We're all working trying to fix the situation. From a psychological point of view, he's not very pleased and is very depressed. The quotes seem a little bit exasperated. I don't know how, like, obviously this ankle issue is serious. It's been bugging him since that Fabinho tackle, which is, what, 2 years ago now, 2.5 years?
More, I think.
So, obviously the ankle is bad. Do we really know the extent of these issues? No, I don't think we do. And I don't think we are ever going to be privy to that information, judging by what Gianpiero Gasperini says every week. He did say the last time he got hurt, it was because he fell into a photographer.
Yeah.
So if the ankle is that brittle, then we could be in serious.
That is true. That did happen with the photographer thing. But like that can, yeah.
It can be a really strong word. And it's like you have to kind of, you know, these things in context, and things don't always translate like what they should do.
He just means he's down about the fact that he keeps getting injured. Like, I think that's all that is.
Yeah.
And I think the thing about the every time he turns his ankle, it seems to get sprained. I think what he means by that is that he runs the risk of doing it because it is just brittle. And that's what he means. I think there's a bit of content. I think I'd like to think we're all aware of the fact that, you know, this is a guy who's it's being translated, so it is obviously a little bit different. But I think regardless of any of that, I think I said this morning, I won't go into too much detail on it again, but I think it's these quotes, regardless of how accurate, obviously it is accurate to a point, but you know, how on the nose they are, mm-hmm. they don't sound good.
Long term.
Yeah, they don't sound good long term, and they don't sound good to anyone who is thinking, we want to sign this guy.
Yeah.
That would be my main takeaway. I think for March, it's obviously an issue because he's injured right now. Mm-hmm. So it is on our radar. But going forward, and I'd be the first one to say that for all of our Irish players, and especially in the January window, they need to put themselves in the best place possible to reach the pinnacle of their career, which will be playing at a World Cup for Ireland. For pretty much all of these lads. But I think for Evan Ferguson, there's a little bit more.
Yeah.
There's a little bit more to this. There's issues going on here, obviously. Yeah.
I would say he's still 21 years old.
Yeah, of course.
So he's still
time. It's
you know
not,
even
yeah.
he's still even developing fully into his frame.
And he's a big guy for his
age.
Yeah,
the ankle is a. Like, I'm not a medical expert on it, but it's not an area really you can build up too much muscle
it's
around.
A nightmare,
like a knee,
yeah.
you can kind of maybe build up the muscle around it, and that can kind of protect a little
bit.
It's
a nightmare, yeah.
The ankle is quite a tough one. I don't think there's anything to be worried about long term. I think we just need to have faith in him, and you know, hopefully he gets over this injury. Hopefully he plays in the World Cup, all things going well, and then he gets like a good break during the summer, yeah. because like we are constantly talking about him, and we're as guilty about it as anyone else. And he's a supremely talented footballer, and there's so much expected of him as well. Like, I think we just need a bit more patience. And it was like, even, you know, when Troy Parrott broke through and he was coming, like he was on the bench at Spurs, he's on the bench at Champions League games. You're
thinking, and it was almost like, as soon as everyone forgot about him, it clicked. Like,
yeah. like, and then like all of a sudden, thing, like, yeah. yeah.
What did that coincide with?
He went to the continent. Where's Evan Ferguson right now?
Italy, they're a bit anti. Well, I don't bring up all things. I think we also forget, like, an ankle. You talk about no muscle.
Yeah.
It's also psychological. It's so hard to trust the ankle.
Yeah.
If an ankle has gone, you know yourself, like, if your ankle's gone, you come back into training, like, it is so tough to trust your ankle again.
Absolutely. But just around that, on my side, like, there's. I have eternal patience for Evan Ferguson because we know what he can do.
The entire country is behind him.
Exactly. And that's what, and I think we talk about it so much because we care.
Yeah.
we really care.
Yeah.
About
like
this guy.
Like we just want to see him do well. Even if he doesn't even do that well for Ireland, you're like,
I'd love to see him just banging a couple of goals.
You know?
And the thing is, he does do well for Ireland.
Yeah, he does.
Three goals in four games in the qualification campaign. Yeah.
Exactly.
And also, like, knowing Gianpiero Gasperini and Roma, Evan Ferguson could well play against Napoli on Sunday.
Mm. Yeah.
You know?
Vaz is injured too.
Yeah. One thing as well, one really good striker. He's not a bad striker.
Bit of an issue there.
He had ankle problems before is Harry Kane, and he turned out to be a pretty good player. Yeah. So like let's just have a bit of patience with that. Let's not worry about it too much. Although I will be worrying about it because
it's natural.
I literally think about Roma all the time every day.
Okay.
But anyway.
All right, then.
Just moving on very quickly.
It's Europe, eh?
Matthew, are Irish players in the EFL this last kind of weekend or two, or and the midweek as well, because obviously they're playing every single midweek as well.
Yeah.
What's the biggest thing as regards, what's maybe the biggest storyline that's come out of that?
Well, to be honest, we can't go into too much detail on it because you don't know a whole lot about what actually has gone on. But I mean, the Sammy Smodics thing has dominated the headlines, not just in Irish EFL side of things, but in the EFL side of things in general. Kieran McKenna's comments basically saying that Sammy Smodics moved to Derby, which we were all very excited about.
Yeah.
And still are, to be fair, to a point. Like, he's come out basically and said that Sammy Smodics has left Ipswich for non-footballing reasons, and we don't know why that is. One thing I said this morning as well, Dara O'Shea is obviously club captain at Ipswich, so him will be well in the loop as to what's going on there. So it'll just be interesting to see how that one develops. Outside of that, in terms of like positive performances, his former teammate Casey McAteer got an assist, a good bit of news from him.
Yeah.
Obviously Ipswich had a pretty big outlay on him and hadn't really set the world alight in McKenna. Mm-hmm. Had some very positive things to say about him, so obviously he sees a player in him. James Abankwa last midweek was exceptional.
Yeah.
Against Hull.
Watford are a bit of a random team, and every time I check Abankwa or I have a look at the highlights, he seems to be at the fulcrum of everything good defensively.
Yeah,
but Watford.
Yeah, and it's strange as well because they had been on an excellent run, and he wasn't getting all that many minutes, and then he got into the team and was actually playing well himself individually, but the team's results started to turn a wee bit, and that spelled the end of Javi Gracia's 56th reign as manager of Watford, and has brought in Will Still's older brother.
Yeah, passed the parcel of doom around the crappy quiz. Yeah. Name every single Watford manager since the year 2020.
Going to say
there's 147 answers.
Did you see that video where your man is like, is this a Watford manager as an EU diplomat? It was, I'd highly recommend checking it. It was hilarious.
I do want to give one mention to a former Ireland international who is going to be making a few headlines over the next couple of days. Glenn Whelan has taken over as interim manager with Athletic, and they're going to take on Arsenal in the FA Cup on Sunday.
Is Glenn Whelan going to be in the dugout?
Well, he's going to be in the dugout tonight when they face Reading, and I think I don't think Glenn Whelan's going to get the gig on a permanent basis. He's done this interim thing for Wigan before. So I think it would be fairly cruel to bring in a new manager and say, right, your first task is to go and play against Arsenal and Emirates on Sunday in front of all the cameras. So I'd say he probably will. I'd say
what a feeling.
Glenn, when I'm dancing with Glenn Whelan. I want to get back to just Casey McAteer quickly, but just before that, Glenn Whelan, what is his, like, he's been an assistant coach at Wigan.
Yeah.
Do we know what his style of play is? Do we know, we've done a bit of punditry on TV. He's been on here a couple of times as well. And Glenn, you're always more than welcome to come on with us.
Especially after you beat Arsenal on the weekend.
When you get up Arteta on Sunday.
This is if Rory Higgins isn't in the door in the meantime as well. So what, watch out for that angle too.
What do we know about, like, obviously Glenn Whelan's been involved with Ireland as well.
Yeah.
And had quite a few things to say about that Ireland squad.
Yeah.
Do we know anything about his philosophy, tactical plans?
Like, he took over for two games. He did two games when Sean Maloney got sacked around this time last year, and didn't change a whole lot. Like, just stick to what was going on. I think that might be the first club gig he was actually involved in, let alone actually taking over. And I could be slightly off there, but I'm sure he's done some background maybe in Stoke or wherever he had been in the past. Yeah. But he spoke at the time, actually, obviously you do your post-match media, and he basically said that it wasn't something that he was ready for. He didn't feel he was ready for, but he took it. He felt he had to do it. Mm-hmm. He had a great relationship with Sean Maloney. They'd gone quite well, but he felt he had to take it on, and then stayed at the club under Ryan Lowe, where things didn't go.
Calamity, wasn't it?
Absolute calamity, sure. So in terms of, I'll come back with reports. I'll watch them tonight. I'm intrigued to see how they get on.
Yeah.
It's going to be a tough game away to Reading against Wigan's former manager, Liam Richardson. So it's got a bit of a task there in his hands. But exciting. It is exciting, to be fair. To be managing against Arsenal in what will probably be his fourth
join
game.
The lore of, like, Shane Keegan, who managed against Arsenal in the Emirates as well. Mm-hmm. Ben, just on Casey McIntyre, what do we think of about him in an Ireland shirt? Like, he's shown glimpses.
He scored against Senegal.
Yeah. And he was very good in that game.
He was.
He is a little bit different to maybe what we have.
He's a little bit different. I'd be a little bit concerned on his role if we're playing a wing back. Could he play a wing back? I don't know. His ball for Leif Davis' goal is brilliant, which, if you have not seen it, Leif Davis' header is outstanding.
A rocket.
Is the ball that good? I don't know. A little bit of a floating
it's
ball.
It's a little bit high.
And he gets behind it with...
boom.
Bang. Yeah. Every single muscle in his neck was strained to get that ball to the back of the net. Yeah. It's a brilliant header. If Casey McIntyre can play a right wing back, then maybe Casey McIntyre has a chance to get back in the Ireland team.
He plays on the right-hand side, and we're not blessed with players playing on the right-hand side. No. Another one we didn't mention earlier on was Chio Ogbene.
Well, Chio Ogbene is ahead of him in right wing. Like, let's not get that twisted.
I think Ogbene is... like, even if he doesn't even play for Sheffield United, I think he definitely probably starts.
No, I agree. Sorry, I was just bringing him up as an option if a few things played out at that right wing back slot. In that, the way that it is, like, you could end up with Jacob Ryan there, and you could end up with Chio Ogbene there. That's just the way it is, you know. Which sounds ridiculous, but just think about it for a minute. Makes sense.
A couple of AOBs I want to get to before we kind of move on to the last final part. Jacob Devaney. If you look at any Man United Twitter kind of debates, or kind of maybe like players they're looking at in the academy,
track the academy,
bit weird, but I don't read into it too much. But this lad has been spoken very highly of for quite a while. Jacob Devaney, we were both chatting about it. We actually watched St Mirren and Hearts. Was last Tuesday, and Devaney made his first appearance in senior football. Was excellent. Weirdly enough, I have a mate who's a big St Mirren fan.
That to me, and I didn't query, like, how you've a mate that supports St Mirren, but then again, I support Wigan, so, like, you know.
Well, do you know one time I went travelling? Yeah. I'd never tell you about that.
Where'd you go?
I went travelling. I'd done basic Spanish school in Guatemala and made a good pal.
So you went travelling to Edinburgh? Or
No. It was in Guatemala. He's actually fit Paisley as well. But he was a big St Mirren fan, became good mates, so he travelled, whatever. He keeps me updated on St Mirren. And they are very, very happy to have him. Yeah. And they're very, very keen to kind of get the best out of him while he's there. And they don't think he's going to be there that long, Jacob Devaney. So this player is born in England, obviously. But has very, very strong roots to Ireland. True, his dad and actually out west as well in Mayo.
Yeah, his dad's Dublin links, I think.
Yeah.
Dublin Shankill.
Yeah, and his dad was a footballer too, and his dad is actually a coach as well.
Yeah, his dad managed Barnsley for a brief period.
Yeah.
Interim, Glenn Whelan-esque, I think.
Yeah, is this player for, like, is this one of these under 21s that we might see in senior squads maybe by the end of the year? Because central midfield.
Sorry, yeah. He keeps playing the rate he's playing, 100%.
Without a doubt, yeah.
Like he's in the same team as Killian Phillips, and they played against like Harris last week, who are the best team in Scotland so far this season, and he was excellent.
Yeah, he was the cause of the red card. He scored a worldie in the cup against Airdrie at the weekend.
I saw that. Great goal. If this guy is committed to playing for Ireland 100%, we should see this guy in an Ireland shirt by the end of the year, and kind of without a doubt in my mind. He's the type of midfielder that we've been crying out for.
Midfielder
who is not only, obviously, anyone who plays for Ireland is technically brilliant on the ball. You don't get that level without being technically brilliant on the ball. But the composure that he seems to have at that age and the ability to drive forward.
He's tenacious
the ball
as hell. He's so tenacious.
Like, again, like we have been fielders who are tenacious, like Jason Malumbi.
Yeah.
But it's that tenacity when you're moving forward with the ball.
Is
what I've loved seeing from in those first couple of games.
Stephen Robinson was talking about him as well, saying basically that he usually doesn't throw a player like that in.
Yeah,
you know, a player who has gotten zero outside of the Virtue Trophy for United's under 21s playing against the second string League One side. Usually throw him in. He threw him in there only in the door.
Yeah,
about 24 hours max, and he's played both games and been.
And he was taking corners and free kicks and everything. Yeah, only in the door 24 hours. Like,
seems to have a bit of.
Yeah, he's a bit about him. Like, he fancies himself like in the best way possible.
Which is important.
That's not an Irish thing.
Yeah. There's some good Scottish football on Tuesday night. Hearts and Hibs are playing each other. Oshie McEntee, we don't know. Jim McGrath's
been out the last little while. He hasn't played the last couple of weeks. Yeah.
Yeah, probably still will be out. O'Neldon could be playing.
Hopefully.
Mm-hmm. So that's probably one to watch out for this evening when you're listening to this, you know, around 6, 7 o'clock Tuesday night.
Yeah.
Hearts are playing Hibs 8 o'clock. On episode 2 of Richie McCormick's Sliding Doors podcast, the stories behind the transfers that almost happened but just about didn't. Focuses on one of the greatest of all time, Pelé.
Pelé. Baba, back to Pelé. Now what's he going to do? He's got the third! Oh, a beautiful goal!
And how the Santos superstar nearly swapped Brazil for Hanover. And how a Nazi ice machine salesman nearly pulled the deal off. Dropping in your OTB football podcast feed this Monday. Richie McCormick's Sliding Doors. Finally, this last couple of bits and pieces. James Furlong, who actually I seen him make his debut for Shamrock Rovers as a left back. I think he was like 16, 17 against Dundalk. He signed for Maribor in Slovenia. Ben, you love the continent. What do you think of that move?
I don't want to say anything bad about a guy going anywhere on the continent, but
it's not in him.
Look, listen, good luck to him. It's an interesting move. They're 22 points off Celje at the top of the Slovenian League. Maribor third.
They have a lot of European pedigree. Have a lot of European pedigree.
Yeah, they do. No, they do. And I can remember them playing Liverpool in the Europa League.
They played Wigan in Europa League as well.
Wigan, that's how long back we're going. And Ali Regba is there as well, former Bohemians man, if you can remember him in Leicester City when he was
thinking
there.
That, you know, that Ian Wright meme where it's like, I thought you were dead, you know, that one.
Ali Regba.
I thought you was dead. I actually heard, so as we were chatting about this earlier, and I was like, where is he ended up? Like, so he was at a team in Algeria.
Yeah.
Then he went to Robotniki, or I think I'm pronouncing correctly, in North Macedonia. And now he is in Slovenia.
Yeah.
The
road less travelled. Look, the Slovenian league is only 4 ranks higher than League of Ireland.
Okay.
If he thinks that's more valuable going to Maribor than going to, I'm not even talking Shamrock Rovers or Derry, I'm talking Bohemians or St. Pat's or Shelburne. Or Drogheda United, or Dundalk, or Galway, or Waterford, they can keep going. But it's like Rovers as well, only them. If he thinks that's more valuable than going to a club in the League of Ireland, well for him. Yeah. Good luck to you. I would just think, don't be, if you're a player and you haven't exactly made it to the level that you wanted to make to in England or Scotland, don't be too afraid. The door is always open, and the standard is a lot better than what it was 10 years ago.
Yeah, no, and that I can only 100% agree on. It's easy to just kind of say that we don't know the ins and outs of the details of all this stuff and what guarantees he's made, and you know, plainly what money he's on and all that sort of stuff. And the fact as well, it's like, I know it's very easy to say, and football is one of those jobs that does open you up to the opportunity to go and live a whatever kind of life you want to live, and there's that aspect of it
which is why I always encourage players to go there.
We are chatting in the office here, we just chat about random footballers all the time. That's what it's kind of what it's like to work for Off the Ball. We were chatting about Union Saint-Gilloise.
Cameron Burgess.
Cameron Burgess, like just random blokes in League 1 and League 2, and now they're all playing Champions League football.
Not all of them.
There's a few of them, but like they're playing Champions League football. So it is like, there is, you know, if you go to the right club, you can obviously develop. James Furlong is 23 years old. He went to Brighton, never made a first team appearance. On loan at Motherwell, went to Hull, didn't play. Was on loan at Wimbledon, and now he's gone to Maribor. It's just a really interesting move, and it's something that we should definitely keep an eye on. He's had four caps, I think, for the 21s as well. Interesting.
I would just like to say very quickly, there's two things on this, right? Number one, I'd love to see Shamrock Rovers play Maribor. That's the kind of standard I'm compared to. I could see Shamrock Rovers beating Maribor, judging by the performance against Shelley. The other thing I would say, it is quite hypocritical for me to say to come home to League of Ireland.
No, I know.
I'm not just talking this sense. I'm talking sense of, I often think of the comparison with a sport that maybe I'm not too familiar with, is rugby. And I always think of
the depth chart.
I always think of,
you can't stop thinking about
players from New Zealand come up and come to Ireland. Why don't players go the other way? And you're blessed. And I know obviously it's the IRFU thing, but I always think as a sports player, you are blessed with the opportunity
to go and get
paid to travel the world. Go and do it. And he's only 23. And look, let's be honest, if it doesn't work out, there will be a club in League of Ireland there taking back in 18 months' time.
Exactly. Yeah, I think as well, like the rugby thing is like the IRFU used to like kind of, and when the rule, you could just live in a country for 3 years and then be able to be capped by that country. That's obviously changed now. Now it's 5, I think. So
yeah, it is.
So like that's probably why the rugby lads, there's a fair contingent of the Irish rugby team that are born.
They have no connection to Ireland.
Yeah, so no. Well, let's say no connection, but like have.
Yeah, but different
residency.
Yeah. Which is fine. I don't know, like I was actually thinking about this like Niall Quinn brought this up years ago when he was like in that era, post Delaney era, about like how they can, you know, the League of Ireland was getting a lot of traction during COVID and that kind of 2018-19 2020 seasons, and he was like, why don't we like, you know, do what Shakhtar Donetsk are doing and bring like Brazilians to League of Ireland, naturalise them and get them playing for us. I don't think that's going to be able to work in the League of Ireland.
That would be quite fun to see.
Well, it would be class, wouldn't it?
It would take a rogue.
Yeah.
It would take one rogue to be like, I'm going to do this.
Yeah, I was watching Derry. I've watched them twice now this season, and I know
they're probably the most likely to do it, I'd say.
Yeah, but there's a guy called Brandon Fleming playing left back for them, and he's excellent. Excellent footballer. He's English. But yeah, I was thinking, if you're going to naturalise someone in the League of Ireland, that's someone I'd be naturalising. Anyway, moving on. Maybe has some.
I know it's the right term. It's a horrible word, isn't it?
Yeah, it doesn't sound
nice at all.
Yeah.
But it's right. Like, sorry, I just caught me here. Just as well, sorry, you mentioned Celia there. Obviously, Stephen Bradley's old mate.
Riera's got to Eintracht Frankfurt.
Yeah, he got an offer from a country abroad. So,
yeah,
there you go.
I've never wanted someone to fail so much.
I wonder, is he paying Twitter accounts to.
Do you know who his assistant is?
Yeah, I know
his assistant is Mikel Arteta's cousin.
Yeah.
So that's the type of football they're going
to
be.
Yeah, and now Albert Riera is trying to look like Mikel Arteta.
And I was going
to
say that's the character they're dealing with as well. Yeah.
And like, what is
like a caricature of Arteta? Like,
what's with these social clips?
Oh, he's odd. Very odd.
Oh my God, I do not have much time for him. Anyway, Albert Riera, if you're watching or listening, if you want to come on the show, let's debate.
Probably is.
Yeah, Armstrong Okaflex, sticking with the theme.
Where are we going here?
Random footballers in Eastern Europe.
Flying.
He's playing with Levski Sofia. Mm-hmm. He signed in January for them for €300,000. Scored at the weekend. They're 7 points clear at the top, right, in Bulgaria. CSK are second. Okay, we've had Irish players out there before. Killian Sheridan has been out there.
Who am I thinking of? Attacking midfielder was there as well for a couple of years, playing in Scotland.
Oh, Graham Carey.
Graham Carey.
Oh, yes. Graham Carey.
What a wand of a boot.
What a player he was.
Wait, Levski.
I'm not sure which he was in Bulgaria.
He was out there anyway.
Yeah,
he was out there.
Get that check for you.
Graham Carey, he's an EFL legend, by the way. Too.
Yeah.
Oh, the Plymouth fans love him.
in the Bulgarian league, right? Ludogorets are third, okay? And they're a team we associate with.
He's with CSKA, sorry.
Champions League, Europa League, whatever. Ludogorets had a striker called Igor Thiago, who they sold to a team in Germany, I think.
No, they sold to Club Brugge.
Club Brugge, sorry, in Belgium. And then he went from Brugge to
Brentford.
And I was just reading at the weekend that is like a lot of clubs in England and Spain and Italy have done is they've kind of gone directly now to like South America to try and find players. And now there's a couple of players coming from Eastern Europe who the Premier League clubs are also looking at, and let's say Spain, Italy, and they're looking to go directly to them and try and find, unearth these talents. Like, for example, in the Premier League, you'd had Ryan, who was at Vasco da Gama, just gone to Bournemouth, who's supposed to be an absolute world beater. Armstrong Okaflex, I'm not saying he's on this level or whatever, taken a mad route to like where he is right now.
He's definitely gone off the beaten track for sure.
Yeah, and he was quite highly rated at when he was at under 21 level. He played for Zurich against Shelburne when Damien Duff was manager in Europe as well.
He could be playing against Irish sides again if Bulgarians. Igor Thiago played against Shamrock Rovers 2022.
Yeah.
Was he a repeat of.
I think it's just a really interesting thing to bring up because, like, this is. Like, these are fairly random kind of places to end up in.
Yes. Yeah.
Like, Ben, you love the continent. Is that somewhere where you can go into
that? I'm going to bring a pledge next week. I'm going to get Mick Lynch alongside me and go on a tirade about the EU to stop this nonsense being allowed.
Sorry, do you know where Graham Carey's playing his football right now?
Is he still playing?
Can we have a guess?
Yeah. This is our trivia of the day.
Oh, he's meant to have a trivia question. I forgot all about
it. You better have that for next week. He is playing with.
Do you want a clue of the country he's playing in?
Yeah.
He's playing in Scotland.
Kilmarnock.
No.
Oh, he's playing for. Berwick Rangers.
Well, according to his Wikipedia, he's currently
always reliable
on loan at Dunfermline Athletic from Livingston.
He's still playing?
Yeah.
What age is he?
He's only 36, 37 in May.
Right. Graham, if you're watching,
Blair,
we got you on.
I talked to Graham Carey.
Yeah. Lastly on that, so just I want to bring up that Okaflex thing because it's just because really interesting. I was just kind of doing a bit of research and reading about it. I was like, like there are big clubs in Bulgaria. Bulgarian football at the international level has been a bit of a mess, but like it's definitely somewhere you can go and develop, and there's a lot of money in it as well. Ludogorets played Ferencvaros a couple of times this year in Europe as well. Obviously, Robbie Keane's Ferencvaros. Lastly, we have the first of the Ireland World Cup songs.
Before we go to this very much more important thing, the Nations League draw is on Thursday.
The Nations League draw is on Thursday.
So that's fun. And we'll talk about that in great detail next week.
Yeah, Nations League.
Is the plan.
Well, we might even get Kevin Caban on about that because he loved the Nations League.
Yeah, yeah.
Nations League draw Thursday. But like before that, hopefully we'll have a Summer World Cup.
Yeah.
Hopefully Ireland will be a part of that. Ireland's first song ahead of the World Cup, I came across it there about a few days ago. It's called Troy Parrot.
Yeah.
And it's by...
Parrot, by the way.
I think it's like spelled how it's
is it
how he spells it, yeah. And by a North Dublin rapper called Kayan, and I'm hoping I'm pronouncing that right.
Like Ryan.
A bit like that, yeah. K-A-E-Y-A-N. He's a North Dublin rapper. The Irish underground rap scene is alive and kicking according to this article, and I definitely think it is. He has a new song called Troy Parrot. I advise you to go and look it up on YouTube. It's a banger.
That's your homework for next week.
I already have, and I can tell you, if I'm not listening to this in Mexico, I'll be listening to this when we play Canada and Montreal.
So if you're listening to this podcast or watching us on YouTube, go and look at Kayan. go and look at his new song, Troy Parrott. It's a very good song, and you can be one of the first people to get on this because it's only released. Yeah. It's only released on Monday.
Yeah.
So
get in the comments.
Get in the comments
and tell us what you think of it.
Tell you what I think of it. Kayan by Troy. Troy Parrott by Kayan. KN.
Troy Parrott has approved of it as well.
Yeah. He has.
He's interacted with it on socials.
It was produced by GSD Benny. He does his beats.
You get paid by these guys.
Albert Riera-esque.
As much as I want to support Irish football, I want to support
Irish rap.
And
no,
Irish
I get
music.
Behind it. I'm not slagging you.
Yeah, it's a good tune.
I kind of am, I suppose. Yeah.
Anything else we want to speak about before we go on?
See you in Montreal.
Yeah,
we'd see him at Montreal. Obviously, that is Ireland.
We'd
could
see
be
him
playing
Prague friendly. First, and then we'd see him in Prague Dublin. First.
I'm jumping the gun. I see him in Montreal. Yeah.
Just to bring you up to date on what's happening, all things off the ball this week, we'll have the League of Ireland pods. I know we didn't get a chance to cover to talk about it. We had the League of Ireland back on at the weekend. We'll have Shamrock Rovers and Shelburne and Tolka Park on Friday. Live commentary of that game on Off the Ball this coming Friday. The League of Ireland pod is on tomorrow. Stephen Doyle, Garrett McGlynn, Vinnie Perth, Football Dailies in your podcast feed every single day for a little bite-sized newsy bits for free each and every weekday. Matthew Brennan's Green Scene was on Off the Ball Breakfast this morning, where he delved into a couple of the Irish football stories as well in even more detail if you want to get that.
That's more perspectives, Jerome Collum.
Yeah. Yeah. OCB Football podcast feed. Ben, who do we have on the football show tonight?
We have Keith Tracy live. We also have Kevin Kilbane.
Keith Tracy.
The man who will be previewing Ireland versus Canada in Montreal.
Yeah.
I can't wait for this.
So there's nowhere else really to go other than here for your football fix. We'll be back next Tuesday, hopefully talking things a bit more positively than what we were talking about things.
All things of our favourite competition. Nations League.
The Nations League. Yeah, let's leave it at that. Matthew Brennan, Ben Symes, thank you very much. Chat to you again next week.